Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organizational studies, brought to you with the support of the University of Sussex Business School. This is episode 46, which features a live recording from a professional development workshop on classics in organizational and management theory, held at the 78th annual meeting of the Academy of Management in Chicago. To learn more about the event, please visit our new website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. This workshop was intended to raise interest towards classic authors and ideas in the field of organization and management theory. So, it echoes the goal of our podcast to disseminate ideas about organizational theory with a special focus on the classics. The rationale for the workshop is that our field, although relatively young, seems sometimes more attentive to disruptions than continuities, novelty instead of tradition. So we hope too that the workshop would help making us more aware regarding connections between earlier and current scholarship, and enable us to explore how ideas, concepts, approaches from the classics, broadly understood, might better equip us to understand current affairs. The workshop included four senior scholars, and each one of them presented about the work of an author they believe is important for organization and management theory. The audience was made up of participants from the Academy of Management annual meeting. We were oversubscribed this year, so apologies for those who could not be included in the event. The good news is that you can now listen to the presentations from the workshop. Also, we are already planning the next year's workshop for the Academy of Management 2019, in which we hope to accommodate a larger crowd, and that workshop will probably focus on contingent theory, so stay tuned for news about that. The fourth speaker was Mark Mentresca, who is an associate professor of strategic management in Oxford University Said Business School. Mark explored the work of Mary Douglas, a very important British anthropologist who lived between 1921 and 2007, and who was a colleague of Mark at Oxford for a short time.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead. I want to take a few minutes to talk to you about Mary Douglas today, an anthropologist, social and cultural anthropologist. In some ways, her work is probably the least integrated in kind of contemporary thinking about organizations and management. I think the first three papers and the first three scholars have each really spoken to people who we recognize as who have come to be seen as central and who work with issues both at the very macro level and at the more meso and micro level. I think Mary Douglas is someone I'm going to say thank you to all of us. Thanks very much. So to say to all of us, I want to trace out a little bit of her own life, education, work experience. I want to talk through a couple of key works she's done. A few of them are more familiar to people in the management world, the organizations world. Although thinly, I want to give you some comments about her work where we might find interesting questions and issues. And I want to end with a conversation that we'll break into small groups also about what all these people have to say about a theory of organization or helping us understand some of organizations and management. I titled the talk today, For a Theory of Organizations Going Forward with Mary Douglas. I think that's very apt for her own interests. So really quickly, I think many people know this book, How Institutions Think. It's probably the most common among people in our community. It's a set of lectures that were given that were started with a couple of chapters that are a critique of rationality and a critique of rational choice. And then a series of chapters that talk about how institutions do the thinking, how do they do the thinking, how do they classify, how do they forget. So using sort of core tropes from her work, interesting categories in identity, in social mechanisms to both remember and forget, to create identity and to blur identity. So I think this book is important. I put the picture because I think the picture is great, right? It embodies kind of 19th century view of a bureaucratic schoolhouse or a labor farm or a penitentiary, all those interchangeable, and this kind of hydraulic mechanisms, right, with a disembodied head and then a set of hands and some gears. So I think that the photo on the cover of the book kind of engages people and sort of reminds us of what's to come. Mary Douglas' work, I think, is full of interesting contradictions, much like that of one of her mentors, M.L. Durkheim. But I think it also is fundamentally interested with sort of social organization. I think that's something we want to re-engage with. By the end of the talk, I'm going to ask you to be persuaded that we want to think about social organization again, and specifically we want to think about comparative organization. Her work, I think, distinctive in many ways for many people in many traditions. I think the recurring theme is a unique kind of comparative analysis that spans self and other, that spans levels, that links people and activity and broader organization. And I would say that's something that is somewhat missing from the traditions that we're reporting on here at the Academy of Management and in some other venues. So my plea here is for a renewed kind of comparative analysis. Douglas is a British, born in Britain, and into a very kind of Catholic family, educated in Catholic schools, eventually went to Oxford and studied at St. Anne's as an undergraduate and then later as a graduate student. Her father worked for the British Colonial Office. She worked for the British Colonial Office, where she encountered a lot of social anthropologists. So one of the themes, I think, across all four of these authors, and maybe many interesting authors, is that they had very rich lives. They did lots of things. They were not narrowly academics in the way that some of us are today. They were out in the world. They were engaged with problems in the world, and they tried to make sense of those problems. And I think that Mary Douglas is in that spirit as an anthropologist, but also someone who worked in then the British Colonial Office. And again, lots of complex issues sitting out there. But I want to underscore, just listening to the three other presenters and also thinking about Mary Douglas, these are people who were actively in the world. And that's something that many of us might find interesting to do today, to understand how to think about new kinds of problems that organizations face and also new kinds of challenges that organizations can address. She was educated, as I said, at Oxford, then did field work in the Belgian Congo. That was interrupted. People will be happy about this. Her dissertation got 18 years to finish because it got interrupted by a civil war. And so she sort of forgot about the dissertation, wrote a book on the Lele, one of her early books, and then finished the thesis like 10 years later. So optimism for people. then she spent a long time at University College London, about 22 years, you know, straight on British social anthropologist, influenced by Evans Pritchard, by a number of other people in that tradition. Came to the U.S. At the Russell Sage Foundation, then at Northwestern for a number of years, and then at Princeton, and finally went back to the U.K. in her later years. She was made a fellow of the British Academy, and she got a series of Queen's Honors, Commander of the British Empire, CBE, eventually Dane Commander of the British Empire. I met her, actually, when I was in Oxford first in 2004. We hosted, my colleague Steve Rayner was one of her last students. He was one of her last students at UCL. He wrote a thesis on Maoist and communist splinter groups and factions, and then ended up being a famous climate science policy person. But at Oxford, so we hosted Mary with a group of people, a group of institutional theorists in 2005, and had a chance to visit with her and really a meaningful activity. She passed away a few years later. She then, and I think this is what people, anyone who knew her says this, she was extremely direct and extremely acerbic and had a wry and brutal sense of humor. And so that was kind of an ongoing, part of her kind of careful ethnographic observations was this kind of close and not sparing of fools and also quite direct. The book she wrote, she wrote many other books and many other essays. The ones I think are most central to us probably, and I'm only going to speak to a few of these, are Purity and Danger, an early book some of you will know, that really tried to understand questions around the duality of purity and danger, the social organization. She wrote a book called Leviticus. These were early studies trying to understand how stigma and how pollution are understood and defined, again, in very pragmatic, applied ways in the everyday lives of people. Natural Symbols. A later book, I think, that also has a following. Two issues there. It's probably her most full exposition of her idea of grid and group, that is a way to understand individual people, human social people, as located in both grid and group, that is located both in status hierarchies and also in relational ideas. If you follow the network literature, you may know that Harrison White a long time ago sort of expressed his displeasure with the way that institutions and network theorists had sort of parted company, and he coined a term catnet, meaning categories and networks, kind of underscoring the duality of categories and networks. If any of you are following the work, people like John Moore and others, Tim Hannigan and the Academy, you know, these are long-term efforts to understand how people are situated both in category structures and network relationships. And so I think Mary Douglas really deserves some recognition as someone who made that argument very early and very forcefully. Natural Symbols is also an important book for us because I think it talks about how people use recourse to ostensibly natural hierarchies or natural distinctions to justify and legitimate what they do. So, you know, Weber gave us kind of a studied distinctions on the nature of legitimacy, traditional or bureaucratic or whatever. Mary Douglas says, no, people use recourse to what seem to be natural distinctions natural divisions of labor, natural hierarchies, and they use those as compelling and powerful ways to authorize and to support various kinds of stratification and prejudice and so forth. So the two, Victorian danger and natural symbols together were kind of a powerful duo, on one hand giving us a social understanding of pollution and understanding how and why stigma happens, and then locating that in complex micro-social interactions that span both hierarchy and status categories. I think natural symbols, some colleagues have picked up on natural symbols, that idea of sort of how you legitimate activity. Frank Dobbin in his thesis in the 80s used those ideas. So that, you know, those are ideas that have value, I think, to enrich a kind of the let's call it the dominant Weberian or Marxist views that occur in the academy. I think, you know, Durkheim is sort of also an under-recognized social theorist for us, mostly dismissed because of his functionalism. I think Mary Douglas is someone who straddled that kind of functionalism with this deeply social and cultural analysis. So again, there's probably some opportunity with Douglas to rehabilitate Durkheim. And of course, that shows up in some institutional work, the interest in rule systems and social rules. Again, Mary Douglas may be a resource for it. World of Goods, kind of an early study of consumption with Baron Isherwood, a book, a kind of celebration of her mentor, Evans Pritchard. Risk and Culture, a set of essays shared with Aaron Woldofsky, and same Risk and Blame, books I never read or heard about before I went to the UK. I got to the UK with Steve Rayner, my colleague at Oxford, and there's hundreds of people who identify as cultural theorists, capital C, capital T. I, of course, have never heard of cultural theory in that sense, but it's a huge Douglas world that really engages with policy and is interested in environmental studies, integrated assessment, risk assessment. So her work with Aaron Woldofsky, I think, has had a big impact on that community of people who think about risk. Some of you know Mike Powers' work and that world on risk. These are kind of complementary worlds, but I'm not going to talk too much, but both Risk and Culture and Risk and Blame really opened up very large communities, particularly in Europe, people interested in policy and very active engagement with policy. That work started with questions around risk, environmental analysis, and so forth. It's a more general interest in policy. We may want to come back to that. You know, we may want to think about in across the academy, the interest in being engaged in political discourse and public policy issues, the broad move, I think, in the academy today to do well and to do good, to engage in grand challenges. It may be that Douglas has something to share with us in that conversation on conceptions and categories of risk and impacts to policy. I mentioned How Institutions Think, probably the book people know most about her or identify most about her. She has said, and many other people have said, but she said directly, this is the book I should have written first. So many people say you need to read Mary Douglas in reverse chronological order. That How Institutions Think really gives us the kind of, let's call it the mature understanding of categories, stratification, social mechanisms of change, and that it in some sense should have been the first book in her scholarly product. I have not read Jacob's Tears. I put this here just because a lot of people are interested these days in reconciliation. The communities that have formed around stigma and emotion, I think, are, I think what I know about the work, interesting. Again, Jacob's Tears, the priestly work of reconciliation. One of the themes you see clearly in her work, and this thing I'm going to speak about a little bit, is its embeddedness in her own faith and her and religion broadly, and comparative religion. I think it's timely. I'm not particularly religious myself, but I'm happy to say that we want to think about religion as alternative sources of solidarities, alternative understandings of belief systems, rich understandings of why people commit and take on risk and build solidarity that in some ways have been effaced by the modern market. As Paul was saying, you know, Marx told us the market was going to drive out these other kinds of solidarity, and I think today we see, importantly, the renewal of interest in those solidarities. So these are some books I think are, you know, interesting. They're probably the broader canon of her work. Not all of her work, but they help us think. I've gone a little more depth into these four, How Institutions Think, Purity and Danger, the kind of natural symbols of this culture. We tried to do it with Camilla Nigmatulina, who I think left. Did she leave? She left. Okay. So one of our great doctoral students at Oxford has done a ton of work trying to understand Mary Douglas in citation terms. And so we searched across many different literatures to try to understand Douglas in the social sciences. But we use those four because I think those are really the core that are most relevant for us as organization and management theorists. Just a quick thing. So basically, of all the sites, Mary Douglas, all the sites for Mary Douglas, Institutions Think about 92.2%, Danger 0.7%, Natural Symbols 0.6%, Risk risk and culture 3.9%. Clearly, how institutions think and risk and culture are the larger proportions here. So overall, 3.3%. So not many people cite Mary Douglas, right? Not many people use her work. This is probably the argument for today that these are all, some of the theorists coming up today are well known and talked about, if not used very thoughtfully. Others are not, are talked about not very, used very much. I put these in just to give us a flavor of where she is. It kind of, one interesting thing, we compiled the sites across time. There's a kind of a resurgence of Mary Douglas' work. You can see these are counts by year, and this is cumulative counts. And so what's interesting here is there's a resurgence in the late 90s, early 2000s, of interest in her work. And we may want to think more about that as we go along. I'm going to just be very brief here. Ian Hacking, some of you know, philosopher of science and statistics, an interesting guy who's written a lot about categories, has a kind of a long set of commentary on Douglas that I will just read because I think they capture what's primary about her for our work. He's talking about how institutions think. I think I opened up that quote I opened up with where a colleague, New Statesman colleague, said, Professor Douglas writes beautifully, lucidly, and polemically. I think that's part of her directness. She is not a one to mince words. Her writing is elegant and beautiful and flows and polemical. If you read her work, it's not neatly worked out. All the pieces aren't put together. It's a bit of an argument and a polemic, and I think that's non-trivial. So he quotes her. He says, Ian Hacking says, she says in the book, How Institutions Think, and this I think is relevant for us. Half of our task is to demonstrate the cognitive process at the foundations of social order. The other half of our task is to demonstrate that the individual's most elementary cognitive process depends on social institutions. She's clearly someone arguing for an embedded, what we would call an embedded view, and this duality between social action, identity, and social understanding. He goes on to say, that's the agenda for chapter 4, 8 pages, he says, but also in generalized level, that's for the book as a whole, and maybe all of her books, right? So this is the argument that, in some sense, how institutions think really captures the core insights of Mary Douglas. The earlier books were also why and how people band together and how they are bonded into social units. That's grid and group banding together and being bonded into social units. The explanations tended to be in terms of practices or rituals of enforced separation where outsiders are made out as dirty or as dirt to be counteracted by cleansing. He goes on to say, and this is the comparative argument, and this is where I'm going to probably end. Do I have like 1 minute left? So the core for methodological ingenuity, instead of merely choosing an interesting topic, lies in her comparative method. In the first place, we shall not expect to understand religion if we confine ourselves to considering belief only in spiritual beings, however the formula may be refined. He says, rather than stopping to chop definitions, we should try to compare people's views about man, humankind's destiny and place in the universe. In the second place, we shall not expect to understand other people's ideas of contagion, sacred or secular, until we have confronted our own, right? So it's a very powerful view, and I think this is the gift of Mary Douglas to us today, is this kind of resolutely comparative view, not in terms of levels of analysis, not in terms of units, not the kind of boring stuff that we do typically, right? It's a much more imaginative and critical understanding of comparison. I happened to read it a few weeks ago, a paper you may know by March Minor and Tammuz, samples, how to use samples of one or less. And they make this point. We often aggregate the outcomes. We should aggregate by observers. Right. It's a very powerful insight. And so I think I want you to leave today reflecting on Douglas as a comparativist. These are just more kind of comments from there. And I had a little bit of stuff to say about institutional theory, but I'm going to stop on this slide and say, I think, you know, going forward from Mary Douglas, she joins the other authors that we talked about today. She joins us in an opportunity to really reimagine why we study things, how we study them, comparative method, and a robust kind of commitment to look across existing social units and try to understand what links and organizes.